Now, and two, talking about the present not being as real as the past, it's not solidified yet. I mean, when you're living mm-hmm. in this moment,
so maybe what?
It's not, mm-hmm. you know, concrete yet because what? We're still experiencing it. And so it only becomes solidified when we look back on it.
Mm-hmm. There's a nice quote that I can't look up right now, but it, I used it in the paper once. It's from a novelist. I can't think of her name right now. 20th century novelist. But anyway, she says, when you're in the middle of a story, it's all just kind of uproar and noise and crashing, and only afterwards does it take on the shape of a story.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think that is part of what's going on there, is that when we say something is real, in our ordinary understanding, that's kind of a one of the highest praise words we can give, you know. I mean,
yeah.
All the things that aren't real are not anywhere near as important as the things that are real. So saying that something is real is bestowing high praise, you know. It makes it worth considering. But from this other perspective, you could say, to say that something is real is to say that it's been slotted into its space, it's happened in. And that is not so so positive. Now, what I actually want to do is look at the positive side of something being real. You know, even if it's true that it's, you know, it's fit into a story, and there's certain problems about that. Let me put it this way. Here's how I was thinking about it this morning. We're going to be looking later, so we don't have to look at it now, but we're going to be looking later at chapter 46 of Love of Knowledge. And for once, oh, all right, you can look at it.
Can we look at it? You can look.
You're allowed to look at page 370. 370 is, I don't often look at these or use these, but this is the diagram and the little caption underneath it. So the diagram, I think, is actually very wonderful. If you think of it as, you know, these little points or these little dots on the top as our ordinary experience, and you can say within each moment of experience there is this rich added dimension, and part of the richness is suggested by the fact that it's not just a kind of an indeterminate space, but it has this, the beauty of a diamond, you know, the sparkling facets and all of that in it. So that's kind of the image. But if we look at the caption, distinctions find uncharted depths, so within our ordinary experience. Perception reveals unknown dimensions. Sparkling facets, emerging light, appreciation, embracing the untold. Enter into open from no within, free to love of knowledge. So I'm not going to try to parse that. But
Does he mean no within or known?
I think it's not a typo. From no within.
Okay.
That's
But if that just mm-hmm. to me, that just enter into open from no within means mm-hmm. that you open that no mm-hmm. up to mm-hmm. without.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the way he's got it worded,
mm-hmm.
it's not obvious, but that's exactly what he means by it.
From say that again, no without.
Enter into open,
mm-hmm.
so you open the no from within. Well, where are you mm-hmm. going to open it to? But without.
No. Okay. Well, definitely, I think where are you going to open it from? You know, from no within. I think that's the idea. Now, whether it opens into without, that's...
Well, of course it does. There's no distinction.
Well, there's no distinction.
There's
by
no
that. So that's why I'm wondering why you need to say without. But maybe that's a good way.
He doesn't have to say without because he said enter into open.
Right. Enter into open from no within. Into love.
It's open from every point in all directions.
Okay. So the word I want to focus on here is just appreciation, or maybe that line, appreciation, embracing the untold. And because I was already thinking in terms of this practice that we're going to do now, when I read that, I thought, you know, there is an appreciation that is appropriate to the past and the realness of the past, if that's accurate, from what we've just been talking about. There's an appreciation that's appropriate to the present, the immediacy, let's say, of experience. And there's an appreciation that's appropriate to the future. And I thought we could work with those three kinds of appreciation. And of course, my particular take on it this morning of how to do that is not meant to be the end of the discussion. You know, there's many, many more approaches. You know, appreciation is infinite, and I don't want to foreclose, but I thought this might be an interesting way to explore it. So the first one, appreciating the past, has to do with this quality of realness that we raised last night. And I'd like to actually prepare for it. It just could do a kind of a warm-up. And so the warm-up is think back to a moment on the beach walk. And Pamela, for you, whatever parallel moment. Think back to a moment on the beach walk. Doesn't have to be special, just whatever has come into your mind. Some moment has come into your mind. Okay. So now I want to actually ask someone to tell me about that moment. Who wants to volunteer? Okay. Super.
Silken weeds flowing in the wind.
Okay.
In a timeless time.
Okay. So that's lovely. I want to get kind of concrete about it for a moment. So, where was that?
It was on this hillside as I was facing the ocean. I could turn around and see that on the hillside behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And as we sat in our group by the rocks, that was right in front of my face.
Mm-hmm. So the weeds, what did you notice what color they were?
Absolutely, they were golden weeds.
Okay. And the breeze, was that only over there, or were you feeling it also?
Yes, it was softly touching the skin on my face.
Did it feel cold or warm or not neither?
It had a little bit of a coolness, but a coolness that was brisk and awakening.
And were there any sounds associated with this moment?
There were many sounds. There was the ocean roaring and humming at the same time. And then the seabirds chirping in and out. And then your voice and my body's talking. There's many, many dimensions of sound.
So I want to make sure, though. I mean, you can go back now and say that all of those things were present, but we're talking about that specific moment. Did you, in fact, hear the ocean at the same time that you saw the weeds blowing in the wind? And how about the other sounds you mentioned, the birds chirping? Do you know if you heard any, if you heard those at the same time that you saw?
Well, the singing was continuous. It was not a snapshot of a nanosecond, so I can decipher it. And it was continuous for at least, let's say, whatever period, delta T. And that delta T, yes, they were in and out, the bird sound.
Okay. So there was a period of time and there were things going in and out of your awareness, let's say. But I actually would like you to focus on a specific moment. You know, a nanosecond, if you want. Nanosecond is probably too short. But You know, it's like if I had, you know, clapped my hands and said, okay, what was just going on in the moment before? So let's pass that, because I didn't ask you to, I wasn't clear about that before, so that's fine. You're talking about a broader range. But I'm actually suggesting that we focus in on a specific moment, an instant.
The moment you lost your keys. I remember that.
Yeah, but that was different. Okay. Did you see anything else? Again, trying to focus in.
Zoning. There was a vague memory refreshing of my childhood in the village, and that resembled so much of that nanoseconds.
Okay, so in the moment that you saw the weeds blowing in the wind, there was also a memory.
Yes, wonderful memory.
Of the village where you grew up?
Yes.
And of a similar site in the village?
Very similar. In essence, there will be villagers with the cow going on top of the weed and crushing them. But then there was a hillside that the same weed that they were crushing, also patches of them that have been untouched yet, they haven't picked them yet. Okay. So we could see that, and then the busy life of the farmers working. And I would be sitting on the hillside, looking all of that and the hillside.
Wow.
So, that memory, were you remembering a specific moment?
It was filling out the background. It wasn't, but it was so essence of the present in every nanosecond that I looked.
Okay, so there was a kind of an essence. Was there also a physical, like, image of the village and the hillside when you were little? Was that part of the moment, kind of physical image of it?
Not as zoomed and focused, but in a vague, comforting sense, the essence was there.
Okay, so it was more, you're using the word essence, but so now I'm going to go to what you just said. There was kind of a vague recollection which had a comforting feeling to it, is that right?
Yeah.
So is it the comforting feeling that you experience in the presence that triggers the memory of the comforting feeling, you think?
I think so. There is a twinship that one invokes the other.
And it sounds like to me you accomplished one realm from the past overlaying another realm in the present.
Okay, but and that's interesting, and I love your word twinship, by the way. That's not exactly standard English, I don't think, but it's very nice because it's so close to kinship. Twinship.
Twinship.
Okay. But I want to stay focused, you know, not so much like why is it that one triggered the other, just the fact that in that moment, you were seeing something, you were experiencing wind on your face. There may have been sounds at that particular moment, certainly around that time there were, of the ocean and my voice and other people's voices and so on. And there was this kind of comforting memory and a certain sense of, but I'm putting words in your mouth, I'm going too far, but a certain sense of kind of at homeness, a kind of. Okay, well, that's enough. I just wanted to draw that out a little bit. And then let me ask you, at the time that this happened, where you, I'm not sure how to phrase the question. Let me put it this way. Those different elements that you've identified, and maybe especially the sense of the past, were you aware of that at that time or immediately after, or is it more now that you become aware of it?
I was aware of it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there was so much new overlays that it was almost enriching that essence from the past.
Okay. So, I wanted to work with someone on a specific moment, just with the sense that if you go into a moment, and pretty much a moment at random, and you already had one that you picked out, I mean, I'm sure you picked this one out, Sudhapa, because there was something very positive about it, but almost any moment. If you let yourself kind of dwell in that memory, more things may come up. Things that you could say kind of flesh out the realness. And I think that that's a way of appreciating the past. So that's what I'd like us to do now. Do it with a memory and explore that memory in this sense. So in other words, just let a memory come up. You don't even have to make an effort. But when a memory comes up, probably of a specific... Well, it'll be of a specific moment, presumably, something that happened.
On the beach?
Hmm?
On the beach?
No, at this point I'm going to say throw it open, whatever, any memory. And it might be a perceptual memory like that, but it might be remembering a conversation or remembering a feeling or remembering a thought. It doesn't matter. Whatever it is, just... let yourself dwell with it and see if it builds either in terms of more details coming up or just the sense of the realness of that situation, and the two may support each other, of course. And so when one memory is done, you know, then wait for the next one and do it again. Okay? Let's do that. Okay. So make a few notes if you like, and then we'll go on to the next exercise. Okay, just take a minute to finish up. Okay. So now we want to turn to the present, the appreciation for the present. Well, the present is like, in one way, it's like the past that hasn't been remembered yet, right? But if we want to kind of honor the special quality of the present, it's similar to something we experimented with a couple of days ago. At least what I'm going to suggest is as a way of doing it is similar. And that is, be with your present experience and try to inhabit the field of that experience in all dimensions. So what I mean by that is you've got the, let's say your focus in the present is being in this room, is sitting here. There are the physical sensations in your body. There are the visual sensations and oral sensations that are coming in. There is a sense of the space in this room, and perhaps, you don't have to try to make it up, but perhaps there's a sense of locatedness at Rotten Lane. There's a temporal dimension to it. There's the past days of the retreat that of which this moment is the continuation. There's the coming end of the retreat and whatever you're looking forward to out beyond that or anticipating beyond that, which maybe grows more vague as you project. And it's not that you're thinking about all those things, but there are all those dimensions that are available if you're in this present moment in the room. So that's what I mean by inhabiting the present moment in as many dimensions as possible. But just to be clear, the present moment might be being present in this room, but it might be that in the next moment you are remembering something or you know, wondering how Kathleen is doing driving down to Santa Rosa, let's say. So that thought comes into your mind, right? So now the thinking of that thought is your present experience. It might be related to the past or the future, or it might not, but your present experience is the thinking of the thought. And exactly the same question comes up, you know, what are the dimensions of that? Is there a feeling associated with that? Maybe concern for Kathleen or sadness, or sharing in her sadness. And then in the next moment, maybe you're remembering a fragment of a conversation at breakfast and the same thing. That's your present experience. That's the content of your present experience. But they're all the kind of supporting dimensions, I guess is a way to say it, in that context. So, Rinpoche uses a word in dynamics which is good for this, I think, and that is just multidimensionality. It's not a complicated word, but it suggests what we're wanting to do. So, appreciating the present through appreciating the multidimensionality of the present moment, and being ready to let go of this present moment for the next present moment. Wherever you find yourself, that same quality of multidimensionality. So let's do that. Okay. So maybe you want to write some notes. Okay, take a couple of minutes to finish. Now, with respect to the future, we have mentioned, it's come up a number of times, that when we look at the future, there's a tendency to kind of go into a fantasy about what the future could be. So you could think of that, you could think of the future as kind of a special case of the past. I guess I said that for the present too. As something that, actually, the way you can talk about that is in terms of the future perfect, you say. The future is something that will have happened. Right? So we still kind of give priority to the past. So that's our fantasy of the future, something that will have happened. So, appreciation for the future, I think, is something completely different, at least the aspect that I want to explore. And this is based on some specific practices and passages and dynamics. The basic idea is this. The future is what is arriving, right? The future is what isn't here yet, but is about to be here. That's the future. Not some future in a month, that's a different possibility, but the part of the future, or the aspect of the future that I want to focus on, is the arriving of what's not now, but is about to become now. So that's the practice. The way Rinpoche describes that is something like to poise, to take a position or poise yourself at the very edge of the present, at the moment where the future is about to arrive, and just stay right there, right at that point. And of course, the content is always changing, right? Because then it arrives, and then we identify it and label it, and it becomes the past. But the dynamic of the arriving, that's the future. Okay? Let's explore that anyway. Thank you. taking time. Just a minute or two more. Okay. So, anything you'd like to share? There's a lot, though.
There's a lot.
Right.
Well, I can say my experiences were the same for the past and the present. And then when we started to do the future, I woke up.
Hmm.
And so that had a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I had this feeling of surfing right on the edge of a moving wave.
Cool. And then felt awake.
Well, especially in contrast to the others, where I definitely felt like there was a sleepy dreaminess
to those
experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does seem as though the future, you know, the energy of time kind of gets brought in by the future, because it's just always arriving, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw it as being a convertible to top down in your
finger.
Definitely the teachings on the permanence are really experiential.
Mm-hmm.
Came to feel sleepy in it.
You managed.
I think it was difficult to maintain attention. It was so easy to drift back in the past or fantasize in the future. Staying there, I wonder if it's related to what you were talking about. It's actually more present. It felt more present to the present than trying to be present to the present was.
Mm-hmm.
And yet more difficult because you can't quantify or linger. You can't linger and quantify or enrich or I could. It's interesting.
A sort of similar, not surfing, but a similar sense of motion and energy. And it was the visual that I got was this page that was burning in a very nice, neat line of fire, with the future just being on the other side of that flame. And so it left this residue behind. So there was something left behind, but the future was like the fuel of the present moment pushing forward and just kept going.
The fuel of the fire of the present.
Yeah,
it's leaving ash.
Left the ash. I struggled with the ash as the residue of the past. That's such a difference.
There is a sense of it seems like to do this, you need to let go of everything that just happened. It's kind of like the ash, and I did wonder, like, how do you integrate those? I wasn't sure, you know, because it seems like. I mean, I think it's kind of an artificial problem, but let's say you could keep that quality of the arriving, the arising of the future in every moment. Could you keep that quality and at the same time, you know, have the kind of content that seems to be involved in the past and the wholeness maybe that seems to be involved in the present? I say it's artificial because you know, we live our lives. It's not as though we collapse because we are so caught up in the future. But it's not artificial in the sense that for want of doing that, then we settle into something that seems very maybe sleepy or rigidly defined. You know, so how to bring those together? I just that struck me as an issue, but I didn't have an answer.
Well, but it's still our idea of the future that we're dealing with in the present, right?
Well, it depends. I mean, in this practice, it seems like we actually are trying to touch the future, not just the idea of the future. Right?
You're trying to, but
right.
At least my thought about that is it's still my idea of the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening. In the future, as far as I know.
Right.
It's my idea of the future, and it's an image that you have of the burning paper and the whatever's experienced.
Mm-hmm.
It's the image of being on a wave that is what comes up when you try to put yourself on that cusp. As
right.
far as I know, maybe there's a
And yet, you are. It is coursing through you. You are traveling through it. And isn't it funny that you're
it seems like it
would be. Well, again, that's an image coursing through. It's
well,
a physical.
Yeah,
well,
image. I had an image.
But
of
it happened while we were thinking.
What happened?
The future passed through. I mean, the moment we were thinking, there was time, which includes the next moment, right? So.
Again, I think
so
that's
are we
a, that's
just
a,
marking that by our thoughts is what you mean? I mean, I'm just saying that's
no,
what
no,
it
I
mean.
I know, but it's like, I don't know, but it's the image I have of the present. If you took two physical things, like two books, and put them together like that,
mm-hmm.
where those two surfaces that meet, it feels like the present and
mm-hmm.
the book. I mean, it could be an infinite size mm-hmm. book.
That's
future.
Right. Right.
And, that, and I was thinking of it, that means... You know that surface is really non-dimensional, which in a sense, I mean, that sense of
mm-hmm.
the present is a moment, obviously,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So that was the image that I had of what that
mm-hmm.
was. But I mean, that's a static mm-hmm. picture, and obviously, it's
right.
you know, it's something's moving, which is what we call time.
Right.
Our sense of time is, but that moment is so is.
Mm-hmm.
infinitesimal. I mean,
right. Well, that's a topic that gets talked about a lot in Love of Knowledge, so you might want to look at the discussion there if you haven't already. Yeah.
Well, one other thought that I have, contrary to what you said, Jack, about the past being more vivid or
mm-hmm.
real, that's not
no,
my
that wasn't great
sense, because I think you know that original, the beginning of the exercise is thinking back to a moment on the beach. There was a very vivid, and a couple of moments I had that were vivid, which is, I think, why I was remembering them.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a sense of, at the time, like one memory was just sort of nudging a jellyfish that was on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of vivid in the consistency of the jellyfish. But my sense of my experience at the time was that it was more vivid. There was more sensory experience
mm-hmm.
happening. The other moment I had was lying on my side and sort of moving my hip to make a little depression for it to fit into. And that again was vivid, but my sense at the time was that it was more vivid. You know, that moment was quite vivid, and more vivid than the moments after and before, which I didn't really remember
mm-hmm.
that well. So that, I know, so that was different than what you were doing.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the realness, the greater realness. I'm not sure about that. The one thing that I was thinking with the past was, you know, by remembering it, we're actually, at least for a time, for a while, rescuing it from oblivion, it seems like, right? Because if you didn't remember it now, it would be gone
mm-hmm.
pretty soon, it seems like.
And so you taste the metal.
Right. 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 Yeah. Tina, you were going to say something.
I was thinking when you described living in the present and you weren't touching the future like the books, we touch the future regardless of whether we realize it or not. And, I mean, our concepts of past, present, and future, I think those are the structures we're trying to dismantle. But I deal with a lot of physical pain, so I really am able to contact the present, I think, in a sense that maybe I wouldn't otherwise be able to do if I didn't deal with so much physical pain. But I was doing the practice like I was sitting here and I'm hurting, I miss my kumbaya, and I'm going to walk under the cabin and I'm going to take two Tylenol. And so it was like I was able to kind of dive into the next moment while I was walking and stay on that edge. And I find it so much easier for me when I'm not in my head, but living life
mm-hmm.
and really actually, you know, moving to the next, to the next, to the next, and
mm-hmm.
in that sense of way and experiencing it in the context of all of it and not just, you know, labeling it, well, this is past or this is present. It's so all connected
next,
for me. It's so all connected.
That next that happens is only real when it's the now, right?
No, I don't think so.
Because you can think of going down to the cabin, but that's not Real, so you do it.
I think it is real. It may just be a thought.
Well,
but it's
real
still,
as a thought, but then it's a thought. It's not you being.
Again, it depends on what you're constituting as real. You know, does schizophrenic really hear voices? Well, I think they do. I think they do. You see, I mean.
Well, but then, I mean, it may be the same if they're hearing something that isn't a voice happening. It's not a voice in the sense that we talk about it.
You might not. It might not be real for you.
But that's what I'm saying. But it's at that moment, somebody isn't moving their mouth to create airwaves that goes in their head. They may. It may be their brain neurochemicals may be doing the same thing.
Right.
That happens to us
right.
when we hear a voice. So is that the same? I mean, I believe that they experience it as.
Right.
Does it mean that there's a person saying something? No, because if it's not there, as best that we can tell. So they're. Maybe the exact same neurochemical process is happening, is producing a sound. So in that sense, it's absolutely as real as our neurochemical process that happens when the sound wave hits our ear.
Well, there's these crazy masters that they talk about and that go up into the mountains and into the caves. And they say that they actually are in another realm that we cannot see, that they can see and hear other beings. So I'm not so quick to say that schizophrenia are people that hear voices or see things that they don't actually see it. I don't know. I don't see it, but, you know.
Well, you have your story about what may be happening. I have mine,
yeah.
So you're right. I don't
but let me make a somewhat different point, because this question that you raised in the beginning about, you know, are we touching the real future? If the future is a dimension that is like the past, if we kind of let our sense of you know, a moment in time that we can describe, you know, so yesterday at 2 o'clock, this was happening. If we say that the future is a dimension in that sense, then I don't think that a practice like this would touch the future. But it may be, you know, that the future has its own way of being, which isn't like that at all. In other words, I guess, you know, the past may have, you know, if you center in the past, then the past has its version of a past and its version of a present and its version of a future. But if you center in the future, then the future may have its version of a past, which is completely different. I don't know what it would be, really. And its version of a present, but most important maybe its version of a future, you know, its way of being what it is. And I think that actually this, you know, this razor's edge, this poised at the brink, this stream of air, of wind rushing past the convertible, those are all images, but you know, they may be touching on something about the future that we would want to call real. Or maybe call alive. You know, maybe the word "real" is better reserved for the past and the present. Or, you know, these are questions that
philosophical.
No, they're not just philosophical. That's the whole point. No. No, and you know, the point is, if we want to understand something about the future, we may need to. Be ready to let go of our understanding of what we normally think the future is. And then we can have what you might call an experience of the future, right? The idea, the explanation that comes afterwards may not be too important, but whether this question of whether we are in fact experiencing the future in that practice is I think an experiential question, not a philosophical question.
Well, what do you mean when you say we might actually have an experience of the future?
Mm-hmm.
Because what do you
mean? Well, I don't mean, you know, suppose someone has an experience of precognition, you know,
right.
where they see something that's going to happen in the future. That's actually not what I'm interested in. As far as I'm concerned, that's interesting, and it may have to do with a being able to contact a broader sense of the present. So you say the future is present in a particular way, which allows for precognition. But that's not the future, you know. That's even though it in fact gets validated by the fact that thing then happens in the future.
It doesn't. It hasn't stayed future.
Yeah.
It's jumped into the present for that person.
Yeah. But the actuality of the future may be very different from the actuality. I'm looking for a neutral word. Maybe actuality will do right now. Not realness, not dynamic.
Yeah.
The actuality of the future may be very different from the actuality of the present or the past. So if you say, well, we're not touching the real future, no, if you mean something that's parallel to the past, but that's, I don't think, is what the future
but,
is.
But wait a minute. Every present moment is the present future. So we're always touching it. I mean, we may not touch it in a total event of the future,
right.
an event that is going to happen in the future.
Well, that's kind of what I'm suggesting. When I say, you know, every present moment is the immediate arriving of the future.
Right.
That's what we were working with. That's what we were looking at.
Sometimes I felt some real anxiety with that,
mm-hmm.
which would seem to, you know, might relate to this being a formerly unknown to me sort of thing that you're talking about. It really might be just very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't really looked at it or bellied into it that way before. And yeah, so that's a interesting.
That's a good image. There's a book that I read a long time ago, and I hardly remember it. But I think I remember this part correctly. It's Saul Bellow's Henderson the Rain King.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I actually remember about it, and as I said, maybe I'm making this up, is that they would do these, they would have these contests where they would stick out their bellies. That just came to me when you said that. And they would sort of bump bellies, you know, like that. And I thought, well, you know, that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's like bellying into the future, really, you know.
Yeah. And so there's a
life quality, a quality of aliveness about it.
And then I felt like the sleepiness was a response of sort of going to sleep on it. You know, there's
this anxiety of this unknown, you know,
also this wonderful movement,
but
then also this, it's too much, I can't, let me be back on
these
for a little bit, then I'll come right back.
Stop circling
down
those waves.
Okay, go ahead and ask your question.
The question has to do with the comment you made about rescuing the moment from oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
And although I'm pretty familiar with that feeling and writing belongs to that, I'm wondering if it's not a story.
Mm-hmm.
So when you said that,
mm-hmm.
it just made me think that.
That is, well, let me try to be a little practical about it because I'm not sure what you're saying. But, I mean, you may be right. But, so there was a moment, for instance, when I was driving back up yesterday after having found my keys and feeling pretty good about it, I thought, maybe I will stop at the trailhead if I can find it. I knew it was going to be a little hard to find coming from the other direction because of the way the road went. If I notice it, you know, and just take a little walk for a while, just I feel so.
Celebrate.
Yeah, celebrate.
A celebratory
walk. So I was driving along, sort of looking for it, and then at a certain point I saw this VW camper that we'd seen the day before coming down, and I thought, oh, I missed it. I've gone past it. And that was a moment that I thought of when I thought about the past. And my thought about that was, it wasn't a particularly special moment. It was just a moment. You know, and I had that thought, and I saw the camper, and if I hadn't remembered it right now, I'm guessing, but it's only a guess, that in 3 weeks, it would have been gone forever.
So what?
So what?
No, yeah. But that's what you're asking. I've been living
so
a
what?
Long time
mm-hmm.
by rescuing
mm-hmm.
the past from oblivion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my sense when you said that was not so what, like, who cares, but, well, no, that's not what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I believe you.
It feels like if we're asking ourselves to look with care at the self, mm-hmm. and the stories we tell ourselves to make meaning mm-hmm. or something,
right.
then what is all the rescue about? What is the drive for the rescue? What is the larger purpose? Identifying it is fine. I'm part of that process very deeply. However,
right.
I'm asking myself,
right.
you know, so when you say, so I wouldn't remember it,
mm-hmm.
By itself, no, but the faith or the truth that you encountered, well, I believe that I can still find the keys,
mm-hmm.
and I will go down there, and then maybe if I walk
mm-hmm.
on the, you know, that
mm-hmm.
it's enjoyment at,
mm-hmm.
at multiple layers, it feels to me,
right.
and this desire to hold on to it in
mm-hmm.
some way feels rooted in another way of thinking about it,
mm-hmm.
that I think mm-hmm. might be promoting more of what causes samsara. Or,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Okay, I think I understand that.
I might be all wet, but I'm just...
That's
you
know.
Yeah. No, I actually, I'm pretty sure I agree that it's not intrinsically significant to remember that moment. And, you know, there were an infinite number, I almost fair to say,
yeah.
of other moments that, you know, over the last 24 hours
mm-hmm.
that are gone. And the fact that that one I now remembered doesn't mean that it's special in some way. And it doesn't, I think there is a, you know, I think you can say so what.
Yeah.
I it's more for me a question of trying to figure out, well, what is the relationship between the past and the present,
but
and just asking that. Yeah.
Again, also just one comment. I'm just thinking, it's gone, and I'm thinking of the Heart Sutra and the end of the Heart Sutra.
Mm-hmm.
Gate,
mm-hmm.
gate, para, gate, para, sam, gate, bodhisattva. It's gone.
Gone.
Mm-hmm.
Gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels
mm-hmm.
to me like the big thing to swallow
mm-hmm.
or to engage with
mm-hmm.
is the gone, not
right.
the...
And it may be that one way to get at that is to investigate the realness of the past.
Yeah, I'm not,
yeah.
you know, it's just that
yeah.
this motivation, this positive value, this, you know, that artists have, that human beings have, to
mm-hmm.
hold on, to put it,
mm-hmm.
up
mm-hmm.
in a cemetery, here was so-and-so, you know.
Right, or photographs.
Right,
example.
Everything, photograph,
right.
capturing. I mean, that's what Proust was doing, but that's like going another place. I mean, there's something else that he was doing for himself that we all do, you know, from our own.
Well, basically, all the stories that we tell and that we inhabit are kind of going back to that theme and image, or is doing that. I mean, we, you know, look a little bit more, is that story that I'm still living out? That's sort of another variation of what you're saying, that we're attached to an understanding or explaining ourselves or acting based on mm-hmm. the moments of that we didn't let go into oblivion, making
mm-hmm.
us do what we do now.
Right. So what is the difference between the moment of the past that we recall and the moment of the past that we don't recall, or this moment,
yeah.
or some other moment?
I think, I mean, the point you raise, I think, is a really interesting point in the page, you know, into the whole theme of what we're meant to be doing here, which is question of the self.
Right.
You know, no, and I think you're exactly right. It seems to me that the self plays a big role in what we remember. And if you can get more, and exploring how the self plays into that, I think is an interesting question. Anyway, that's a great point.
Okay, let's take a short break, 15-minute break. 11:30, we come back here. Okay? And then we don't have much time, but we'll do a little something.
What time are we coming back?
11:30. Yeah, well, actually, I think that the so what response is the right. I didn't feel like it devalued.
That's what I'm kind of
right.
it came
yeah.
out so soon.
No.
Touches on that thing about
Thank you.
it's okay to keep the rest of this in here as long as mm-hmm. I promise not to get a dot anywhere?
Promise not to get a dot anywhere. What shall the punishment be? Let's see what happens when we do a short break. People are not finished. They come back in.
We're talking about you.
Oh,
you see.
What a wonderful subject you guys chose.
Okay, well, I wanted to take a few minutes just to share some thoughts about how we're going to go forward with TSK and CCI, and of course that's with the idea that you might like to participate in some way. So first of all, you should know that you know, we have this wonderful building now down in Berkeley that we call Mangalam Centers, and it's mostly the home for the Mangalam Research Center for Buddhist Languages, which is also my responsibility. But it is where CCI has its offices, and CCI is free to hold programs in the lower level. You could call it the basement, but I prefer not to.
A lot of good things happen in the basement.
Yeah.
In the heart of the building.
Right.
Bowels, not the
heart. So there's three rooms there that could be used for public events. And I'm actually thinking of setting one of them up as a kind of a salon, which will require a little... we'll need to make it nicer because they're in the bowels, and so there are no
nothing wrong
windows.
The bowels encourages to think about the bowels.
Think about the bowels.
How to deal with it.
Okay. So, I would use that partly for Mangalam, for talks, presentations. I'm thinking of kind of like on stage interview format, that kind of thing. But also for CCI, and how that develops, I'm not completely sure. What I have in mind, more specifically, for CCI is that relates to TSK is next summer. Every year we sponsor a consciousness studies conference here, and it's on first person methodologies. We've done that for 5 years now, and I'm not completely satisfied with how that's gone, but it seems worth continuing to put energy into. The people who come tend to be interested in TSK, certainly in Buddhism, meditation, because it's just it's an inviting group, We are exploring ways to deepen, or I'm exploring ways to deepen that connection. So I have this idea in mind for next summer. And it grew out of something from the consciousness conference where people said, well, next year, let's make part of the conference, or let's have a program, whether it's part of the conference or not, which would be kind of a training program or research program in a couple of specific first-person methodologies, because the guys who do that, and there aren't too many people who really are doing that, they have a hard time kind of finding venues, drawing people, and I'm hoping that happens, so it depends partly on them. And if it does, my thought was to try to integrate it into a larger program. So this is all tentative, but my vision for next summer is that we'd have a 6-week program. And mostly it would be up here at Rockland Link, but partly it would be down in Berkeley also. And one of the things that would happen during that program, well, first of all, the theme that I'm thinking we would pursue has to do with the senses, opening the senses, something like that, or experiencing, you know, sense experience. And the two people who would be doing training would be focusing on that also, which I think works with their approach. And so I'm thinking that the online program this coming year will focus on the senses. And then the retreat, a TSK retreat, would be held up here that focused on the senses. And maybe we can integrate it with some other kinds of programs that don't have to be CCI programs, Institute programs or Rodney Link programs, maybe a Kogye program. But the idea would be to be able to offer a 6-week program that people could come to some of or all of. And there'd be the TSK, there'd be this research, I'm thinking maybe the people who came for programs could also be subjects in the research. And that would be—it's a very interesting thing to be a subject in this kind of thing. So I think that would work well all around. There's a woman who's been coming to the consciousness studies conferences for a couple of years now, who is an artist who has been specializing in tactile sculptures you feel. And I'm thinking that she could do something up here. When she comes up here, it's usually experiential. Typically, we've worked with clay. But something maybe more like a whole workshop focused on that. Maybe some other workshops focused. I've tried once in the past doing something with the Feldenkrais method in TSK. Mm-hmm. It didn't work so well, I didn't think. I didn't find it that interesting. It's called the Feldenkrais method.
Feldenkrais.
It's named for a man named Moshe Feldenkrais. But I was thinking, someone just put me in touch, one of these consciousness studies people just put me in touch with someone who is in this field and does the Alexander technique. And I thought that might be a very interesting possibility. So maybe to bring in some outside modalities, as we say in that field. And then maybe have like a weekend workshop that our artist, her name is Rosalind, would do. But at the same time, then that starts to connect with how we could do things down in Berkeley, because I'm imagining maybe we could have an exhibition of her art, an ongoing exhibit down there, and maybe do some workshops connected with that. I've also thought about, because there's some interest, I've thought about having some sort of a jazz performances, small groups, you know, and maybe we... It so happens that Mangalam is really nicely situated, and it's beautifully situated in a lot of ways, but the street that it's on is just a one-block street, and it'd be very on one side. On the other side, it's kind of a big, busy street, but on the other side, it's just this one-block street. It'd be very easy to close that street off and have a little kind of street fair there with jazz and events of different kinds, you know.
It's like past, present, future Berkeley, the vision that you have.
Yeah.
All the different street fair, art show, and research, I mean, it's integrating it.
So what I'm trying to do, is create a kind of a broader vision of what we could do and see what directions we can move CCI in and move TSK in, because as we mentioned in here a couple of times, it's a little too isolated or insulated. What we do, and it seems the potential is so great. We'd love to find ways of expressing it. So those are my thoughts. I just wanted to share them with you, and you'll probably hear more about them because you're on our mailing list. And if you have any thoughts in those directions or contacts, people you think might be valuable to work with, but I do have this idea, this kind of vision, small vision, of a brochure, at least an online brochure, advertising the 6-week program with like, you know, a dozen different offerings, and some up here, some down there, and people could do different things. And
some in between.
Some in between, right. Well, we could do some beach stuff for sure.
Well, writing workshops, too.
The possibility.
Writing workshops are very appealing to a lot of people.
Well, the whole idea of working more with the arts and creativity. I know some people who'd be interested in the theme of what they call social creativity. So that's a possibility, too. So I wanted you to know about that.
Thank you.
So we don't have time at all to go into much of anything. I'm going to have to quit in a few minutes. I want to end at
11:45. We have 2 minutes. Hurry, pass.
Right.
Longer space, smaller,
voice. Okay. No,
we could stand at the door.
So, had we had time, we would have read chapter 46, which is a great chapter.
Well, sum it up for us.
And now I won't. But I encourage you to read it. It talks about inquiry, the importance of inquiry. I guess I will read you one sentence if I can find it here.
Is it the last
page? Page 3, no, chapter 46. Not one sentence, one paragraph, I guess. At the heading on page 372, under the heading, just this paragraph, and then we're not going to talk about it or anything. Inquiry and analysis, which reveal the game as a game, could be thought of as a bridge between the realm of ordinary understanding and the realm of deeper knowledge. A bridge built on foundations grounded solidly in both worlds. Yet the bridge is a magical one. When we cross it, we find that the realm to which it leads us is the same realm from which we departed, only transformed in a way that is at once too subtle to be specified and too all-embracing to describe.
How beautiful.
And so I thought then as a kind of just a closing, and we'll do it like for 2 minutes really, just an invitation to explore this, the exercise that goes with that chapter, exercise 46 on page 377. It is mind that imagines world without mind. This same limitation operates in terms of time and space. When subject relates to object or self to world, the time of the subject and the image of the object are in operation. Action can take place only within this time and can only be directed toward specific objects. Does this mean the mind of the subject or self is fundamental? This would be just like, you know, going to the depths of despair. Well, we can't do anything about it. To explore this question, try substituting for the mind at the center of experience a fundamental facet of being. Space, time, or not. Note that the intention is not to undermine the mind or deny its status, though questions of status may take on a different significance. So I thought that for 2 minutes, we can do that, just see what it might be like. That's what can we say, just kind of point toward the possibility, gesture at the possibility. Instead of putting conventional mind, let's say, at the center of experience, putting space, time, or knowledge at the center of experience. So we'll do that really just 2 minutes, but it's our kind of closing gesture toward the possibilities that the vision offers. Okay.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you so much for the retreat.
It's been a great,
very much.
Great pleasure for me, too, and I always learn a lot.